The aim of our Living with Diabetes podcasts is to share information and inspire, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. DRWF will not be held liable or responsible for failure to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who's familiar with your situation. Views, information or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent opinions, standards or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them.
Hello and welcome to the latest podcast in our series, Living with Diabetes, brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I'm Claire Levy, and in this edition we're looking at the growing development and implementation of technology in managing diabetes, from monitors to hybrid closed-loop systems, often talked about in the media as an artificial pancreas. We hear from Shay Speakman-Brown at Dexcom.
As all technologies develop, we will see, very fast and rapid innovations happening in that area.
Professor Partha Kar gives us his take on tech and diabetes treatment in general.
So the closed loop follows, I would say, it's the third part of the trilogy, just like any movie. The first one was about getting CGM or Libre to people's lives, and the second one was getting CGM covered in pregnancy. So this bit is the final part of the jigsaw. We have changed the paradigm of care completely.
Plus, DRWF's Lee Calladine previews the return of our new big annual national event, United Through Diabetes, backed by popular demand in September this year.
And we know that the different diabetes audiences want to have their own content. So, yeah, we're hoping that we're ticking all the boxes and we've got something for everybody.
Diabetes technology, ranging from continuous glucose monitors to hybrid closed-loop systems, have been grabbing big headlines in recent months. I caught up with Dexcom's Shay Speakman-Brown to discover more.
My role is Market Access Director. I cover strategy, policy and integration for Dexcom.
So, we've had loads of news around the hybrid closed loop, and it's really exciting. Can you then describe how Dexcom has helped to develop that technology?
Yes, Dexcom has been a real-time continuous glucose monitor provider for quite some time. We've done some recent research as part of our constant development. And recent survey data from Dexcom actually suggests that almost 45% of people with diabetes don't actually understand what a hybrid closed-loop system is or how hybrid closed-loop could benefit them. So with all of the news and excitement that there's been in the media from NICE and from NHS England, we're hoping that that will really raise awareness of how such systems can benefit people living with type 1 diabetes.
So how does the CGM, the continuous glucose monitor, work? And how does that then link to the pump?
So the hybrid closed loop system, or HCL as it's quite commonly referred to, they're designed to essentially mimic the activity of the pancreas. So by having a digitally controlled insulin pump with data on the body's current and projected glucose levels, and that's provided by the continuous glucose monitor, or real-time CGM as it's called, these hybrid loop systems are a combination of the CGM and the pump. And then that system together automatically modifies the insulin dosage to suit the changing needs of the person with diabetes.
And what kind of difference does it make for someone living with type 1 diabetes?
It can make a tremendous difference to the person living with type 1 diabetes. Dexcom-powered CGMs, for example, have been proven to significantly improve outcomes, and in some senses giving people with diabetes much more confidence in their diabetes management and control. For example, a Dexcom study called ADAPT, so that's AIDAPT, and that was published recently in the New England Journal of Medicine last year, showed that the hybrid closed-loop therapy or system significantly improved maternal glycemic control during pregnancy for people with type 1 diabetes. And that was done with a significant cohort, actually, for medical devices. There was 124 pregnant women in this study, 9 sites across the UK, so good variation. And it used the Dexcom G6 as part of the hybrid closed-loop system and really highlighted the efficacy of utilising hybrid closed-loop to manage glucose levels.
And that technology will be rolled out. Do you know what this looks like and how long it will take?
Yes, so NICE published a TA, so that's Technology Assessment 943 this year. There are a number of criteria associated with that, and the good news is it is for type 1, and the criteria is very broad. It's going to focus on many different types of type 1 situations. So, for example, children and young people, people wishing to become pregnant or who are pregnant, and then adults. So this will be rolled out from April 2024, so now over the next 5 years. So it is hoped that most people living with type 1 diabetes, particularly in England and Wales, will have access to this over the next 5 year period.
That's amazing, isn't it? And so
it really is.
So this hybrid closed loop, what do they have to do themselves? And are you working to make it a fully closed loop in the future?
So at the moment, the hybrid closed loop system is what NICE has produced its technology assessment on, and that guidance will be rolled out across England and Wales over the next 5 years. As all technologies develop, we will probably continue to see, you know, very fast and rapid innovations happening in that area. At Dexcom, we're always pushing for increased access to technology, and hybrid systems that are powered by Dexcom CGM can already significantly improve that user's time and range and lower their HbA1c levels. As we're a global leader in real-time continuous glucose monitoring for people with diabetes, we continue to grow our connectivity in the hybrid closed-loop space at this moment. So, for example, our devices are now compatible with an Insulet Omnipod 5 or Tandem T-Slim X2. So we're at the moment focused on hybrid loop systems.
The person with type 1 is still having to do a little bit of work though, aren't they? Still inputting carb levels, yeah?
Depending on the system they use, they will need to make some manual adjustments themselves. But all the time, you know, technology is improving and innovating. So I guess the utopia going forward would be to make it as automatic and automated as possible.
And you have a software linked to a smartphone and now to an Apple Watch. What kind of differences does that make for people?
We're really excited to have our Dexcom G7 device now compatible with Apple Watches. It's really the first time we've been able to offer a real-time continuous glucose reading on a smartwatch without people with diabetes needing to carry their phones. We're hoping that some of the advantages of that people will be able to realise immediately using Dexcom G7 is that there'll be less restriction, less need to have their phone with them all the time, and making managing their diabetes so much easier. So, for example, not having to take their phone with them when they go to exercise or ride their bike, and not having to have their phone by the side of their bed at all times. So we're really focused on the person with diabetes and trying to ensure that they have the most control, but even with like less restriction around to take, for example, their phone around with them.
That's fantastic. And what does the future hold then for Dexcom research?
We're constantly looking at research programs, innovation. One of our key drivers is really what does the person living with diabetes want? So our research is focused not on just clinical outcomes, but the impact of our technology on people living with diabetes and really listening to what makes a difference to their lives. And we did listen to the feedback, for example, with having the direct to watch with Dexcom G7, and we will continue to bring features and benefits and also look into managing research outcomes that will feed into our product line going forward.
And is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think we are continuing to innovate, and we're continuing to listen to particularly the diabetes community, not just type 1 condition, but also in type 2. So we're hoping that as time continues to provide more outcomes for those living with type 2, that we can also be present in that space and provide those people living with type 2 diabetes the same access to technology as those with type 1 do.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast. My next guest is Professor Partha Kaur, who probably doesn't need an introduction, but in addition to being a consultant in diabetes in Portsmouth, has senior roles in the NHS, which have become more technology-focused. Welcome, Partha. So when did your original NHS role start, and what were you tasked with?
So it started in 2016, April, and so that's 8 years, and the task was multifold. To begin with, it was more about supporting the existing national director, who was Jonathan Balabji at that time, with plans and policies, and then evolved more into looking into areas such as type 1 diabetes, technology. The basic remit to start with was we need to do more in type 1 diabetes and improve the outcomes. So that was very much a task given at that time by the then chief exec of NHS England, Simon Stevens.
So when you look back over those 8 years, what have been the greatest achievements for you?
I think the usual suspect always is going to be about how we have changed, I think, a lot of the way type 1 diabetes has become. You know, we have, I think the biggest success, I would say, is digitalizing the whole process. Technology has had a massive explosion. But that comes from the principle of me believing that self-management is key. And if you give people more technology, self-management gets better, and that translates into results. So that probably would be, I would say, the biggest success. But, or at least that's colloquially seen as the biggest success. To me, however, the biggest success probably has been a bit more than that, which has been giving the people living with type 1 diabetes and their carers a very strong voice. So whether it be by encouraging peer support, language matters, all of that, or by publicly encouraging more louder voices, I think that probably, I would say, is something that will stand the test of time. So yeah, I think.
So in those 8 years, how has the NHS changed its approach to type 1 diabetes care?
I think it's firmly on the agenda right now. That's what I would say. I remember going to meetings in those times, and very rarely, if anything, was ever mentioned. It was all about prevention, and prevention was very much linked with type 2 diabetes. And my ethos has always been prevention is not just primary prevention. Prevention is also secondary prevention. So when you're doing type 1 diabetes, what can you prevent? You can prevent people from having complications. So that's also prevention. But so I think that's a fundamental thing that has changed. It's very much in the agenda, and recently even, you know, Labour, as part of its election campaign, mentioned type 1 diabetes and how they're going to look into better access and all that. So it's on everybody's agenda. And I think that's probably been the way the NHS has looked. Every system has got type 1 diabetes as a plan. Hybrid Closed Loops is one of the flagships now of NHS England with their media coverage, etc. So I think that's been one of the fundamental things that has changed. The NHS's way of looking at type 1 diabetes certainly has improved, which is good.
So people living with type 1, how has this helped them, particularly with access to that new technology?
So I think my fundamental philosophy has always been that if you look at a chronic disease, and in this context, type 1 diabetes, I think we in the healthcare system get it wrong by focusing more and more, we need to get more professionals, when the answer actually should be, we should more trained professional, not just any professional. That's the first thing. But I think it's anyway the wrong focus, because we don't have enough professionals around the globe. And I think given the fact that people spend 0.01, 0.02% of their time with the healthcare professional, the margins of improvement are better. If you focus on the bits where you make people living with their chronic disease better. So self-management. And I think what technology does is does two big things. It helps you with self-management, no question, because, well, who wants to prick your finger when you don't want to? Who wants to inject insulin when you don't want to, when you can avoid it? It improves peer support. I think people talk to each other more. People are more aware of it. They compare graphs. I think they help each other. It just becomes an avenue for people to talk about living with it and getting ideas from each other. And then also opens up the avenue as to how you engage with trained professionals. So I think those are the three big things that technology does. But I think the big focal point with technology in the context of type 1 diabetes is making it living with it slightly better. As I've always said, it's a very unforgiving and unremitting condition. So anything you can do to make life slightly better will improve outcomes. I think that's what technology has done.
And what advances are still needed for those living with type 1, and where will this go in the future?
I think there's much more to be done. I mean, people talk about the hybrid closed loops, and lots of people have given it the moniker of artificial pancreas, and we all know it's not that. You know, artificial pancreas conjures up an image where you don't have to do anything. Like, you just sit back and everything happens. That's not quite it. So you've still got a lot of work to do with the hybrid closed loops. And I think where it will go is the whole system will become much more automated, further closed loops with means to tackle your hypos and properly work like an artificial pancreas. So I think that's where this will go next in the world of type 1 diabetes. The cure is always 10 years away, as everybody says. Lots of exciting work goes on. But I don't want to raise false hopes because it's been a long time coming. So we should see how that all plays out. I think I would focus more on the technology and it becoming better, smaller, quicker, more faster. That sort of stuff will probably go in the next few years.
And you've certainly championed that closed loop work, and you've said you'll still pursue it. What did you see as you covering there, and what sort of time scale do you think?
So I think, you know, I've always said if I make a promise or if a promise is made, we need to deliver it. And I think the NHS is not very good at it. You know, we always make promises to people, we'll do this, we'll do that, and nothing happens, so people get more frustrated. So the closed loop follows, I would say, it's the third part of the trilogy, just like any movie. The first one was about getting CGM or Libre to people's lives, and the second one was getting CGM covered in pregnancy. So this bit is the final part of the jigsaw, whereby we get it into people's lives. I think timeline-wise, it probably would be the same as it was with the others. You know, Libre took us 5 years. The pregnancy, because the numbers were smaller, took us about 3. So this, we have laid out a plan of 5 years, which is ambitious in its own right because of the pace at which the NHS works and everything. But we've laid out the plan, and that's what I want to help implement. And, you know, at the end of 3 years or so, if this has become standard care for type 1 diabetes, we have changed the paradigm of care completely. So that is the intention.
And you've also worked in other areas, quality and outcomes framework, getting it right first time work, eating disorders, service start, tackling inpatient safety, or the fun projects like your comic books, virtual reality. Can you give us some more details on how working collaboratively has improved these areas at a national level?
So I think the first thing I would say is that none of the technology work would have happened without the community of type 1 diabetes behind me. And I think I don't make any two bones about it. You know, social media, podcasts, blogs, going out to meetings, charities, engaging with people has been a fundamental part of my work. And I do not see how any of this would have actually happened without the support of the community. And I think all the commissioners and all the people concerned know about the support that is there. So I think the collaborative work has taught me a lot, I would say. It's changed my views about a lot of things. And it's given me, topics to pick on, which I feel has mattered a lot to the community, which they've said this thing needs tackling. So I felt that was a good barometer of collaboration, which is different from what you read in books or policies and stuff. And, you know, if you tackle the things that matter the most to those who live with the condition, I think you get the respect back from the community. And I've been incredibly blessed to have much love on that note. So I would say the collaborative work is key. And to anybody listening in who wants to do any leadership role, my basic advice beyond anything, money and negotiation skills and all that sort of stuff is there. But if you know how to work with your community, you'll get success.
And you've made yourself incredibly available to people on social media, probably unheard of before. And what difference did this make to the national role?
I think it gives you a connection with people. I mean, you listen to people, you talk to people. And, you know, I think people appreciate that you're also a human being who's trying. You know, I tend not to go out and make promises, exaggerated promises we can't keep. And it's about, so closed loop is a very good example whereby I would be very open as to where we are starting off, why some people will be ahead of others, but it will get to others in due course. So social media for me has been a means of two or three things. I would say, first of all, it's been about the learning. Listen, I do listen and I do read a lot of tweets about people living with it, their carers, understanding, trying to understand as much as possible the angst of living with it, what would change their lives, issues with safety in hospitals. All of those are very common themes. What technology does to their lives, which gives me focus in the policy role. The second one would be interacting and, debating about topics and stuff. But the third one is also, which I think is a part of my role, is try to help people when the system is against them. Because as much as the NHS talks about it, the person living with the condition doesn't really have a voice. And the system can be quite ruthless in shutting people down. So wherever I can, if people have reached out, I've tried to pick up a phone or do an email or use my privilege to help. So I think those are the three things that social media has been good. And that's just built the connection and has translated back into success over the time with policy.
You've also talked about improvements to type 2 care, especially in young people. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's got to be a big focus of people who are coming in next in the policy space. We've started that ball rolling, and I think a lot of the work is done by, championed and research done by people like Shivani Mishra, who have done some amazing work. And our role has been to try and put that in the national focus. It's a big, big priority area and should be because of the risks these young people carry. And I think statistics like below the age of 40, you've got more type 2 diabetes than type 1 diabetes is quite a big statistic because of the impact it can have on the system. So that's been an area where I've been quite keen to look into. The other areas of type 2, which I've been very keen on tackling, has been frailty. I think we sometimes forget that we're also an aging population and frailty is a big thing, and we need to make sure we look after people. As I always say, it's lives to years, not years to lives. So it's one of those things whereby we need to be making sure we're not chasing targets which makes people unwell. So those are the two main areas in type 2, I would say, and also opening up access to continuous glucose monitors to people on insulin with type 2. So those, I would say, two or three things in type 2 diabetes which I've touched upon. Not quite my sort of area, so to speak, but tried to help where possible.
Mm. So after this 8 years in your national role, apart from having a lie down, what do you think your next big challenge in diabetes healthcare will be personally?
I think implementation and keeping hold of the implementation role, I think that's a challenge in its own right. But I think it will happen because we are in a hugely better space compared to where we were when technology first came here in exploded, so to speak, in 2018. I think I'd like to focus on other areas of society, so to speak. Which I'm looking at, tackling racism and all that sort of stuff in the medical workforce. But a big area of interest is going to be India and type 1 diabetes care, which is where I've started some work and looking at better insulin access. And believe it or not, in India, I think the most recent statistics says if you've got type 1 diabetes, you lose about 40 years of your life. That's the difference between having it and not having it. And that's a big gap. So it would be good to sort of, get insulin access sorted, look at education better. So that's something I'd like to do back and give back to the country where I came from. So, those things will keep me busy, I suspect.
I would imagine so. Yeah, that's a heck of a challenge, isn't it? So, Partha, just looking at that idea around inequality, how does that manifest itself in the UK? But then also in a country like India, how do you start to tackle those kind of inequalities?
So if you take, let's say, the NHS or the UK, it's a very interesting conundrum because you can tackle deprivation gaps, as we have done with technology. So because I always say, if you work to give it to everybody, then there are no gaps. And that's what we have. There are no gaps in access to CGM because 97% of the population has it. But I think the problem becomes when you set up criteria and guidelines, and that tends to skew towards people who are less deprived. That's number one. Number two, the issue, if you look at the data, isn't necessarily with deprivation. It's actually to do with local level of clinical leadership, because there are areas of huge, high deprivation levels, but really good outcomes because they've got some phenomenal local diabetes teams and leadership, and vice versa. So the challenges here in the UK is more about data sets and challenging people. People don't like challenge, which is the problem, and they take it very personally. So when you say to somebody, it looks like, for example, say, in your area, the lowest, you know, the highest deprivation quartile is really poor, you know, doing badly, people take it as a personal affront, while you should not see it that way. You should see it as a challenge. You should say that, well, do you know what? I should do better. You know, that's the data and that's what we should do. So that's in the UK context. It can be done. There's no question. It absolutely can be done. But it needs a fundamental change in mindset whereby any data questioning is seen as a personal affront. That's one. In an international space like India, it's a different game altogether because you're trying to convince governments of the importance of investment in health, which is different. So in the UK, you've got investment in health and not necessarily the case. So I think that's more of a slow burn, and you work with politicians, get advocacy off the ground, so very much in its infancy phase, and that's what we are targeting. Get more advocacy, get more politicians involved, industry to work closely, get more manufacturing of insulin and technology at a local level, so it's much cheaper, that sort of stuff. So different challenges, different nations, but it's doable in most places if you focus down and have the right leadership in place.
Mm. Is there anything else you'd like to touch on?
No, I mean, I probably would say, you know, just to all the listeners who listen, and I think, you know, some of the stuff I always say is that the work that yourselves do, I think it's very important in the sense of highlighting, and the interaction I've had with all of the charities has been phenomenally good, very positive. And it's been very adult, very respectful, you know, mutually appreciative of each other's challenges. And I think that's taken us all forward as a nation. And I think there's much to learn from that, from all quarters, whoever does these roles. So I think it's bearing in mind to those who listen what charities do and how much they also push people like us in policy to make things happen.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, the DRWF podcast. And no doubt, a lot of the topics we've just discussed will be centre stage at United Through Diabetes, DRWF's new big annual event, which held its inaugural event last year and is returning by popular demand this September, Saturday the 21st to be precise. To discover more, I'm joined now by my colleague Lee Calladine. Welcome to Living with Diabetes, Lee.
Hi Claire, yes, I'm Lee Calladine. I'm the Educational Event Coordinator here at Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I've been here for about 18 years and I organise the charity's events for people living with diabetes around the country and work with colleagues in the NHS to raise awareness. We go to community days, we do webinars, occupational health, and all manner of education.
And last year, you hosted the first United Through Diabetes. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. So, well, for many years, we've held a programme of educational events around the country for people with diabetes, their family members, carers, anyone that wants to come along and learn about diabetes. And they've been residential weekends, one day events, cooking events. We've done walking weeks with ramblers to get people active, family camps. But last year we decided to retire all of those and pool our resources into one bigger central event that would give us much more impact. It'd give us a chance to reach bigger audiences, bring in industry partners, NHS teams, and just create a one-stop shop of diabetes that we hadn't been able to do at the smaller events.
And when you say central, where is it?
The event is held at a hotel called Chesford Grange, and that's in Kenilworth in Warwickshire. And we chose that because we'd done a few of our smaller events there and we knew it really well. It's very central and people can get to it from all over the UK, and it's a really nice venue.
So talk us a little bit about the different streams on the day.
At our previous events, we always had a mixed audience. We didn't really have capacity or space in the venues to put on specific information. And we know that the different diabetes audiences want to have their own content. So at this event, it's given us the chance to create a central hub, so a big exhibition area. And around that, we have program streams for families and children and young adults with type 1. The wider type 1 audience have their own program stream. Type 2 diabetes, we have our diabetes funded researchers there with their own program, so people can meet the researchers, find out about their work, listen to some talks from our professors that work at different institutions. We have a diverse program, so people from the Muslim community, South Asian, African Caribbean community can listen to talks specific to them, things like managing diabetes during Eid or during Hanukkah or religious holidays. We have talks for people with diabetes related complications like macular degeneration, neuropathy, and those kind of topics, and a community village as well, so people can meet other people with diabetes, lots of peer support, community events. They can learn where they can connect locally with groups. They can sign up for a skydive if they want to raise money for the DRWF or an abseil or do a marathon. So yeah, we're hoping that we're ticking all the boxes and we've got something for everybody.
And what is the date for 2024?
We're back in September and it is Saturday the 21st.
And how do people sign up for the day?
Well, we're trying to keep it as easy as possible this year. They can visit our website. It's www.drwf.org.uk. And if they go to the event page, you can find the United Through Diabetes information and sign up very easily online.
Is it expensive to go?
No. We charge a very minimal fee of £10 per person. If it's a family, it's £20 for two people and two children, or £5 for children over the age of three. And that's subsidised heavily. So for that, you get access to everything at the day, the exhibition room, a nice delegate bag. You get all your tea and coffee throughout the day and a nice soup and sandwich lunch. Actually, access to everything. And it's great value. People tell us that they go home with information, support, new friends, and everything that they came to the day for. Great value.
I was going to ask you, what kind of feedback have you had from last year's event?
Yes, sure. The feedback that we had was fantastic. The event achieved exactly what we set out. People came back to us and said that the information available at the day, the speakers, the exhibitors were all absolutely fantastic, relevant. They went home with information, new skills. They'd met other people with diabetes. So they had a great, great day. And the feedback as well from the NHS teams, the community groups, the diabetes companies that came along was exactly the same. So we know that there's no event anywhere that has something for everybody. So all of those diabetes audiences under one roof. So it's quite a unique event and the feedback reflected that.
And it's really for everybody, isn't it? People who are newly diagnosed and even people who have been living with diabetes for a long time.
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, I would say for people that are newly diagnosed, it's even more important because they're new to the journey. They're going to meet other people with diabetes, and you can learn a lot from people that have been living with diabetes for a long time, you know, that lived experience. The access to, you know, we always cover the key topics. So exercise, looking after your feet, your eyes, you know, blood glucose management, hypos, all of that stuff, that's key to diabetes. So if you're new to the journey, it's definitely a day to come to. And likewise, the information for people that have been living with diabetes for a while or for many years is still relevant. We always say that repetition is good when you're learning, and the guidance, the guidelines around diabetes, technology, medications are constantly changing. So even if you come each year, you're going to learn something completely new because things have changed.
Mm, absolutely. And that exhibition space is really good, isn't it? Just to wander and chat to people on the different stands.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. We know that people like to meet the companies that make and provide the blood glucose meters, sensors, insulin pumps. Just gives people a chance to talk to these companies that they wouldn't normally get the chance to do. They can see what new technology is available, what they can access. We have all the NHS teams there, so they, again, you know, people that live with diabetes, we don't often get enough time to talk to our healthcare professionals. So having the chance to talk to the retinal screening team or the podiatry team or the dietitians or the consultants, it's invaluable. And then we've got the, you know, the diabetes organisations selling all of the diabetes kit and peripherals. So they're great to have their community groups. So it's we've been told many, many times that in evaluations after the events that people value the exhibition room.
Mm. And this last one, and you're going to repeat again, I know, is with the families. And I think parents with very young children living with type 1, they get such a lot out of it, don't they?
Yeah. It's an important part of the event. You know, we get parents coming along, and their kids may have had diabetes for a few years. We get parents along very new to the journey, and it's so important for them to meet other families that are living with it. The support that they get is invaluable. We like to put on some really fun activities for the kids as well. Often they don't get to meet other children with diabetes, so it's a great chance to meet new friends. We know the parents love to meet the researchers and find out what work's being done. This year we're going to be really looking at current research and hopes for the future, and we know that's going to be attractive to people attending. It's giving them a space of their own, but within a bigger event and still, you know, access to the bigger community.
And people get to meet you.
I know, it's the best part of the event. That's why they all come.
And the rest of our team, which is reasonably small in number, but we pack a punch, don't we, at DRWF?
Oh, yeah, we certainly do. Yes. And it's just a great team, isn't it?
It is. And just remind us of the date again, Lee.
It's Saturday, 21st of September, and we're at Chesford Grange in Kenilworth in Warwickshire. So easy to get to. The train station is 2 miles away, taxis, motorway. And actually, people can stay at the hotel on Friday night and Saturday night if they like, because you've got Warwick Castle, Kenilworth Castle, Stratford-upon-Avon, all a short drive away, so they can even make a weekend of it.
That's fantastic. So Lee, just chat us through again where people can find out more information and to sign up for the day.
Okay, so all the information about the days on our website. All you need to do is go to www.drwf.org.uk. Go to the event section and you'll find United Through Diabetes there, and you can sign up very easily. Keep an eye out on our Facebook and our Twitter and LinkedIn pages, because we'll be posting updates there. We're working really, really hard at the moment to build the programmes and bring along all the exhibitors. And in June, we'll be announcing the full lineup and all our guests. And that'll go on the website and on the social media pages. And of course, people can ring into the office on the main number as well if they've got any questions.
I believe, Lee, on the event page and on our YouTube channel, people can see some interesting just short videos with some of the speakers from last year.
Yes, that's right. So last year, we had an amazing lineup of speakers, and you interviewed them all, and they can be seen on our YouTube page and also on the UTD Digital Hub, which is a page that we created to put content from the event, so people could go on and have a look if they couldn't get there or they couldn't get to all the talks on the day.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it. I know you are too. And we'll hopefully see lots of people, old and new, at the event. So thanks very much for chatting to us.
Thank you, Claire.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
Thanks, Lee, and also to our other guests, Professor Partha Carr and Shay Speakman-Brown at Dexcom. Just a little reminder, you can find full details about United Through Diabetes and register via our website at drwf.org.uk, including special hotel rates for those who choose to stay overnight. There's also lots of other useful information about living with diabetes and how to support the charity, together with the latest fundraising events, news and information. Our website address again is drwf.org.uk. This is Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Our thanks to everyone who talked to us, and also to you for listening to this latest edition of our podcast, Living with Diabetes.
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2024, Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.